I'm the vice president of VMware Public Sector. VMware is the global leader in virtualization and cloud infrastructure. Our products and services deliver the government innovative ways to reduce cost and increase productivity. We're installed in just about every single cabinet-level agency. We have 250,000 customers worldwide. We're installed in 99% of the Fortune 100 and 97% of the Fortune 500. So we're a large company that has had a lot of experience at delivering these innovative solutions.
And virtualization is what people associate not only your company, but probably your voice with because yes. of some of the commercials that you've had on the station. What's kind of the state of the art in virtualization? What are agencies thinking about? What are they talking about? What are they asking you about when they're considering virtualization today?
Well, virtualization still can provide the government a ton of ROI. Let's face it. Right now, the federal government has to do, I hate to use a cheesy term, more with less.
I knew you were going to say that.
I know. I could tell. I could see your facial expression. But besides just cutting budgets and finding ways of buying less stuff, they need to find, at this point, with the kind of budget deficits we're facing, innovative ways to leverage IT to do things more effectively and more efficiently. Virtualization is actually just one of the many things that VMware does, but its core tenet is to help virtualize and to bring up those IT resources so that they're available. And this allows you to consolidate and collapse them. So it allows the government executive to go ahead and reach some major goals and objectives, such as data center consolidation. I got to tell you, Francis, I've been really excited about what I've seen over the last couple of years with the IT executives being able to achieve a new charter, you might want to say. Besides saving money, they've really been able to look at ways of being innovative just like their commercial peers. I mean, there's some pretty impressive facts and figures. IRS IG just released a report that noted a $10.3 million in savings from server virtualization. Plus, they anticipate another 7.7. Just think about that. If the average agency was able to do that, a lot of this deficit issue would kind of go away.
Yeah, it's the dynamic of this is interesting to me because I've had a number of people that are observing this and saying the agencies hesitated to do this for a number of years for technological reasons. They weren't sure about the technology. The savings is forcing them to do it. And then they're seeing the technological benefits as a result of what they're having to do because of budgets. Is that a fair assessment of what you're seeing?
Well, it's basic human nature that, for the most part, the majority of the population is going to do something more wholeheartedly when they have to. Mm-hmm. And we certainly have that eminent event here where the reality is we have to implement cost-saving measures and find new ways of providing infrastructure to the citizen to provide our services. So virtualization is one of those and stories. It allows you to collapse your data center environment, reduce your overall hardware cost. By doing that, you're reducing the footprint for power. So now you're doing other good things like saving the environment, right? Reducing the amount of carbon. For every server removed off the data center floor, that's like removing 4 tons of carbon, a footprint.
Wow.
But it also helps you start getting to that next step. The big savings and innovation and agility that we really can now deliver services at a new level to our citizens. And that's the first step towards cloud computing. And virtualization is an enabling technology that allows you to start down that path. VMware today, according to several studies, owns about 80 to 90% of the virtualized workloads that are in the federal government today. Now, not everything is virtualized. There's still some other opportunities to be able to consolidate and centralize their resources. But think of that. Now they're all prepared and ready to meet that next demand, to serve up cloud computing their way.
Are the companies, the agencies that are coming to you and asking you about cloud, are they starting, are you having to do the whole education process at this point, or are they coming to you saying we're ready to look at potential solutions? We're ready to go. We just want to know exactly what it is that you can offer.
As we know, the government is a very big place with a lot of different people with a lot of different missions. So there isn't a generic answer there. So the way that VMware has been fortunate enough to work as a partner with the government is being able to deliver a solution based on where they are in their journey. Some organizations are just at the beginning and starting to centralize and consolidate their data resources. Others are much further along the journey and now are prepared to go towards cloud computing. It's really important that you look and you look at the mission, and there's constraints about how they can consume cloud computing. So for VMware, we look at it sort of like your cloud. So it doesn't matter whether it's private cloud, which means consolidated only on their facility and centralized only their resources, or a hybrid cloud where it might be a combination of their resources and outside resources, and then finally how they can leverage public cloud, because it really depends on where they are in their journey, what their mission is, and what their constraints are.
And I guess the constraints includes the idea of certain kinds of data, certain kinds of applications, and so on. And maybe are there some agencies that are using a combination where maybe some of their resources will be available in a public cloud, some of their resources will be in a private or a hybrid cloud?
I wouldn't say some. I would say most. I mean, we've seen even the Department of Defense put in 9 times out of 10 when they look at whether it's private or public, it has mostly to do with security or constraints for privacy. The majority of the government workloads will probably have to live in the private and hybrid world, in my opinion, at least at this point. But the great thing that we offer is once you virtualize your workload, even if you were to go out to the public cloud and discover that that's not a good idea, it doesn't matter. The virtual machine workload is very mobile and agile, so it can meet the changing needs of whatever the mission sometimes changes when security in particular is changed.
We got into cloud a little bit before I was finished with virtualization, and I wanted to ask you, what we talked about kind of where the agencies are with that today. What are the things that when people come to you that they maybe still don't understand or still aren't clear about how virtualization can benefit them?
Well, you know, virtualization, you know, we have I've been in this role heading up public sector for VMware for 8 years. And if you would have asked me that before, I would have told you that, and probably 4 or 5 years ago was the first time we met, I ended up spending a lot of time defining what virtualization is. Again, when you start talking about 250,000 customers, we virtualized last year enough workloads to actually reduce the power to power the country of Denmark. So I think virtualization is here and now and an accepted strategy to really capitalize on the resources that you have available. So we don't spend a lot of time defining what virtualization is. We spend a lot of time figuring out how to maximize that and apply that to somebody's architecture today.
Well, let's talk about that process then a little bit when we come back from the break. My guest is Aileen Black of VMware on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
Federally Employed Women, FEW, the organization of choice for leadership, equity, and the advancement of women, would like to extend an invitation to FEW's 43rd National Training Program, NTP, Wheels of Change Keep on Moving, in Detroit, Michigan, July 16 through 20. The NTP is the largest training opportunity in the world for women in federal employment. The training program will include training tracks to better train employees in the following subjects: executive leadership, science and technology, project management, human resources, and more. In addition, the Office of Personnel Management, OPM, EEOC, and many more agencies will be on hand, so networking opportunities will be endless. Meet other government employees at all grade levels and ranks from across the nation. The 2012 NTP program, Wheels of Change Keep on Moving, held in Detroit July 16 through 20, is for you. So for more details or to sign up, please call 202-898-0994 or visit few.org. That's FEW.org.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government. Please contact us at advancedalliant.com for more information on potential Alliance Small Business teaming opportunities. That's advancedalliant.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the departments of defense and state. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. How do you get information past the bristling battalion of censors in China? The Broadcasting Board of Governors is trying to figure that one out. Plus, the Merit Systems Protection Board is overhauling the way it operates. It's the first comprehensive review in the history of the agency. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter today with Aileen Black from VMware. And we talked about virtualization, and we'll talk about cloud computing, which you mentioned in the first part of our conversation. We'll talk about that later. But what's the path look like for somebody that is just getting started, who comes to you and says, all right, we need to do this. I need the savings, whatever the reasons are. What do I need to do? What do you need to know about my operation? Any of that?
Okay. From the very basic level, if somebody hasn't done any virtualization, if you go into any IT data center or any building, you'll find tons and many x86 servers. They proliferate. According to studies done by IDC and Gartner over the last few years, most of these servers in the federal government are utilized at less than 6%. Put it the other direction, that means 94% of the power of those servers are not leashed, right? They're being underutilized. Not only are they being underutilized, but they're causing power. You have lots of overhead associated with managing them, keeping up security, patching them. It's one of those, let's look at this. What virtualization does is, again, allows you to separate the hardware from the software and allows you to pick up that resource. And what it allows you to do is take all those unused resources and unused applications and consolidate them down on less servers. So now you have utilization that's closer to 85%, which, you know, if you had hired somebody and they were only working 6% at a time, you probably would be pretty unhappy about it. So that's why it just collapses cost. It collapses the management overhead associated with it. So that's why you see such dramatic results of 70, 80% savings when people virtualize and consolidate their data center.
How did we get to that point where there's so many resources that are not being used to their full capacity? And how can we make sure that as time progresses, we don't come back to the same concept again? I imagine one of the responses will be cloud computing, so that you
well,
just pay
I'll,
for
I'll
what you're using.
I'll take a couple of steps back further and taking your lead and saying we're talking with somebody who hasn't done it before. And
okay.
I hate to say history has a tendency. I love to read history, and I love to read particularly history around battles, but it has a tendency to repeat itself, and you can really learn from it. And actually, what you asked a question, how did we get here? Well, I'm going to age myself here, but when I first started in the IT industry 26 plus years ago.
When you were 10 years old.
I was 10, that's right, when I was 4. it was mainframes. It was consolidation on the mainframe and is centralized. And what came into era in the 80s was the PC and distribution, and in the 90s, the proliferation of the x86 servers, and they just went everywhere. And that distributed compute server type environment was seriously adopted for some good reasons. Now, the problem is even good things used in the wrong way can be bad. And then there was unintended consequences is underutilization and cost to manage it. So if you really want to look at virtualization and cloud computing, it's taking that mainframe concept and making a software mainframe. So from a simplistic perspective, what it does is virtualization is that first step, which lifts up that software and the resources up and jacks it up, right, and allows you to build a software mainframe that isn't constrained to that big box that used to be in the data center, and allows you to create these elastic pools of resources that then can be managed and utilized based on requirements that don't necessarily have to be physically in one place. So you can, hey, if the guy down the street had, you know, if you were sharing the same cloud, if the guy down the street was only using 6% of the resources, he would probably give you a pretty good deal if you wanted to use those remaining 94. So it's really, again, full circle, taking the mainframe concept and applying it to software and harnessing all those resources, not only in your data center, but beyond to the cloud. And the biggest agility factor and cost savings for the government, and I got to give a lot of credit to OMB in delaying the release of their digital government strategy, is to really look at it. It's not only about the data center anymore, Francis. It's about lifting up these resources down to the end user device, whether it's mobile device, your end user computing, your desktop, or whether you're a server, and tying that into the overall cloud. This gives an incredible amount of ability to be able to leverage those resources and serve data based on the requirements and the security. But it also really reduces cost, because now you have sort of like one dashboard. You can really manage those resources across.
As you mentioned, you've been doing this since you were 4 years old. Have you ever seen a time where the technology that's available is, you use the word, elastic, where there are so many different ways it can be twisted and turned and moved to help an agency fulfill its mission?
Well, you have to, with anything, whether it be virtualization or cloud computing, understanding your mission and understanding your constraints and your resources is the key to being successful, especially when you have a flexible architecture. If you don't, I highly recommend that you stop and you make sure you understand and that you have an execution plan along with experts that help you execute it. So if you rush, you know, fools rush in, and I'm not saying anybody has that I'm aware of, but if you rush in, you may have, a proliferation of x86 servers. I got to tell you, I am consistently, pleasantly surprised and very proud of how the government has adopted cloud computing. They've gotten beyond, as I said before, about cost savings and really implementing, this strategy. And we've seen some huge savings across the board, or even just data center consolidation. I mean, look at the amount of data centers the U.S. Navy consolidated alone. They consolidated 52 data centers alone in 2011. Think from a taxpayer what that means, right? So, you know, they're adopting these strategies. They can't do it without a plan, right? That would be dangerous. And our military services, our government executives aren't going to do that. But they're applying these and they're making it happen. And it's saving us money.
It's interesting to me that in this conversation, the data center consolidation conversation, the biggest roadblock to doing this, according to one CIO I talked to recently, is Congress. When they want to close data centers, certain parts of the country, members of Congress will say, well, you can't close that one. That one's in my district. And that's turning out to be the biggest roadblock, not the knowledge of the agencies, not the people that they have to be able to do the work, not the partnerships that they have with companies like yours, but this extraneous thing doesn't really have a whole lot to do with their day-to-day operations and their abilities to do what they need to do.
I can't speak to that particularly, but
sure.
I can tell you that we have many agencies that look at that differently. So, yeah, you can look at it where you close that data center, or you can also leverage and harness that unused capability to meet new mission objectives. One of the biggest thing about the journey of cloud is it's moving beyond the infrastructure. It's really moving to a point where productivity is going to a new level. And I mentioned that cloud computing isn't only about servers anymore. It's about anything down to the mobile device. Think about how you work and interact all day long. You're expecting streams of data. You're using your phone. You're using your probably your tablet. You're losing your PC. If you were to lose those and not being able to do that, if you, the streaming data of that, but when you connect that into a fabric of the cloud, you're really going to be able to enable your workers to be much more productive, be able to be more productive where they are. I live in Northern Virginia, as I shared with you earlier, and I had a chance to sit at a hearing, I guess it was last week in Fairfax County, and it was Representative Conley speaking, and he said the reality is telecommuting isn't an option. Telecommuting is a requirement here in the Northern Virginia area. If you've ever been caught in rush hour, which I listen to your radio a lot when I am, and you really need that ability to be able to do that. So harnessing this isn't a choice anymore. It's a requirement.
Aileen Black is my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We will continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
Germany may become one of the first nations to integrate Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 onto its naval vessels, according to the German Chief of Naval Operations, Axel Schimpf, though the German government has not made a decision on whether to adapt its fleet of frigates for ballistic missile defense. The enhancements would allow Germany to participate in the Obama administration's European phased adaptive approach, embraced by NATO. Depending on the political decision and funding, the German Navy stands ready to provide sea-based capability, Schimpf said.
5 million hours of experience, 20 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and or complex and or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files into all these different formats, then 20 years later somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Talking quality before the ICU. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. After long stays in intensive care, patients might not be able to return to the life they once had. But a study finds that family members who have to make decisions for the patient often hadn't talked with the patient about these quality of life issues. Sarah Douglas of Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland saw that in an analysis of 116 family meetings. Douglas says this discussion is not about ICU medical care. It's about how the patient wants to live after the care.
If we can have these discussions at a time when we're not ill, or at least not acutely ill, we'll be able to afford our loved ones the gift of knowing our wishes.
The study in the journal Critical Care Medicine was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Years of practice, dedication in and out of the classroom, stamina, persistence, sacrifice. It all leads to this moment. Champions win here.
Don't miss the 2012 NCAA Division I Men's Lacrosse Quarterfinals May 19th. Hosted by the U.S. Naval Academy at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis, Maryland. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Aileen Black of VMware is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked in the last segment, Aileen, about virtualization and how that's leading people to the cloud. And you've mentioned the word mobility a couple of times. Mm-hmm. You noted my disdain for the term more with less. And I guess the mobility revolution is another term that's right below that on my list of things that I've heard often enough so far. But it really is something that every agency is dealing with, the whole bring your own device conversation and all of that. Where are the benefits and where are the constraints for cloud computing as it fits with the mobility revolution, I guess, because I can't think of anything better to call it?
Well, first, the expectations of the average user, especially the younger user, is that they should be able to access their information where they are, when they are. We were talking a little bit earlier before the show began about Facebook and our kids and about Twitter. And if you look at that, it's streaming data. We are in the, as what our CEO says, the post-PC era. You're not being tethered to a desk anymore. You're expecting your data where you need it, when you want it, and conveniently. So the opportunity for this is really to really increase productivity. And cloud computing allows you to harness all those resources out there. You brought up bring your own device. My daughter goes to a high school in Arlington, Virginia. And that high school now has started bring your own device. It's common to find that whether you're in schools or government agencies, our company has bring your own device, and it allows our employees to maximize their productivity based on their personality, whether it be a tablet, whether it be a smartphone. Francis, how many devices did you carry to work today?
I can't even count them, I guess.
But what it does is it allows you to really increase productivity. So, you know, when you start looking at, just the average commute of the government worker, I think I read a study that said it was about 40 minutes each way. So 40 minutes each way times two is, about 80 minutes, or the average 10% of an 8-hour workday, right? So if you were able to provide them the ability not to have to do that commute, to be able to use these mobile devices depending upon where they are, what they're doing, and how they're doing it, that would increase productivity by 10%. So if you take the average cost of the incomes or the labor costs associated with the federal government, and I read in the study that you took that 10%, it would equal a $2.5 billion savings. So mobility is real. Mobility allows you to serve up the information or the training or the education in a way that allows you to maximize the time spent. It is smart, and cloud computing really allows you to knit that together and harness that.
And it sounds like, from what I'm hearing from HR people in agencies too, we're past the debate over whether it works from a human perspective or not. And it is now the technological debate. Are we equipped to be able to do this, or are we willing to make the investments that we need to make to be equipped to do this? Is that a fair read on it, do you think?
It is a fair read on it, and there's lots of agencies that have already progressed and put out RFPs, and Department of Transportation, Homeland Security, the Army, VA, and DISA are all evaluating mobile device options. The Air Force Special Operations Command just awarded a contract to purchase tablet computers last week. So you're finding it all over. They are understanding the value of being able to leverage that. And more than anything, the workers involved here are happier and more productive. And I've constantly heard the challenge that it is to maintain and to help develop develop the IT workforce in the federal space. This allows the federal agencies a way to make people feel more productive, happier, and have a more balanced lifestyle.
What are mistakes or what are things that agencies aren't thinking of when they're trying to develop strategies or they're organizing pilot projects or whatever? What are some things that maybe they should throw in the mix that they might not be at this point?
That they shouldn't separate mobile computing from what they're doing in the data center. They need to look at an overall architecture of how they manage it. Because they might solve it here at the mobile device, and they may solve it here in the data center. But what they aren't doing, if they're not looking at an architecture that really looks at an overall way of harnessing all that, they're going to miss an opportunity for that agility and that ability and those maximum cost savings and productivity. And it also, by looking at it overall, VMware, for an example, has solutions that go all the way down to the mobile device to the data center, right? But what it allows you to do is implement a strategy. It allows you also to keep up things with the other part of security, because you have all these devices coming in. You need to make sure that you have a plan on how to maximize that. And virtualization allows you to encapsulate those devices and allow them to then be in a manner and plug into your resources in a way that is secure and managed and maintained.
I understand what you're saying. It seems logical to me, though, given the way the government's done business and has been organized for the past, 225 years, that those silos would still exist. And that you would think of, well, we're going to do this piece and we're going to do this piece. And even though maybe those two pieces should be connected, they're not necessarily connected in execution.
Well, certainly there's always, it's kind of funny in a way that we have created some new challenges from an HR dynamics, because at this point, historically, like you said, budgets and IT responsibility has been segmented depending upon what level you were, whether your mobile devices, the desktop, or the data center and on servers and mainframes. But I think that was a few years ago. I think they have really leveraged. There is still some work to be done with procurement reform on how these things are addressed, because technology has really been advancing, and possibly our laws and our ability to be able to address how procurement and funds are spent have not yet kept up. Congress is very much focused on this, and I was trying to make progress in this area, but there's a lot of work to be done. Because if you go back in the government average budget cycle, right, you're years ago, you've set it up. So you have money that's based on buying technology versus setting up money that allows you to take advantage of as a service contracts, which really is the difference between operations budget and maintenance budget. And to be quite frank, you can't just swap the two. You have to go back and have it approved to be able to move it from one bucket to another.
You mentioned security. Let's talk about that when we come back. Aileen Black of VMware is my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition, from providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
From curbing the AIDS epidemic in children to capturing the world's most notorious arms trafficker, federal employees accomplished some amazing feats in 2011. Now, 33 feds are being honored for their work. They've been named Service to America Medal finalists. Federal News Radio interviews each of the nominees in our Service to America Medals Tracker Series. Find out what makes them tick and what interesting work they are focusing on next at federalnewsradio.com. Search for Service to America.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
To hear Senator Chuck Grassley tell it, the IRS has complaints from thousands of corporate whistleblowers, and yet he says the IRS is slow to jump on this.
When they know that there's money that hasn't been paid, they collect it, and then the collection of it, you know that there's an award to be made, make the award. And it takes two people to decide to make the award. You got to have the IRS commissioner sitting down with the Secretary of Treasury, and it ought to be a pro forma decision.
FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal. Drive.
Profile America, Wednesday, May 16th. The first Motion Picture Academy Awards were given out on this date in 1929. Unlike the big hoopla surrounding the awards now, about 270 people attended that first ceremony. The silent movie Wings was chosen as Best Picture. Many of the movie stars honored with Oscars through the years were born in May. Among them, Katharine Hepburn and John Wayne, along with Gary Cooper, Henry Fonda, and Jimmy Stewart. When the first Oscars were awarded in 1929, Americans spent $720 million that year going to the movies. Now, motion picture theaters generate more than $13 billion annually in revenue. Profile America is produced by the U.S. Census Bureau, measuring America, people, places, and our economy.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Aileen Black of VMware, my guest on Industry Chatter today. One of the biggest concerns that people have about mobile computing, cloud computing, is security. You mentioned security a little bit earlier, Aileen. What's the good news in security when it comes to some of these things that we've been talking about? Most of the time, the concerns that people have around security make it sound like security is still this kind of wild west, but I have a hard time believing that's true with all the transitions that we're seeing to a lot of this technology. I can't imagine agencies would move in that direction if they didn't feel confident that they were using secure solutions.
I totally agree, and we wouldn't have large agencies like the Department of Navy moving forward with cloud computing if it wasn't the case. Earlier in the talk show, I talked about the proliferation of x86 servers, which really laid the pathway to really have required the virtualization be leveraged to consolidate. So, you know, with anything, when there's a lot of physical footprint in devices, there's a lot of overhead in keeping up and making sure each one is patched. So when you really come down to security at the end of the day, it's an arms race. What virtualization and cloud computing does, it allows you to virtualize those servers. It allows you to bring those resources up into the cloud so that you can reach out to them and patch them. So if you know, it's an arms race. So keeping all of your servers and your data, your IT resources up to date with the correct patches, the correct security software is probably the number one thing that you need to do to make sure that you're not only secure yesterday, but you're secure tomorrow. And if you do have a security breach, it allows you to very quickly deal with a virtual environment, which doesn't mean you have sneakers running around trying to update. So the very nature of it actually provides you the platform with the proper planning and discipline to create a more secure environment. But at the end of the day, it's up to people in implementing procedures and following the policy that makes it. Now, besides that, there are security products that VMware provide for the cloud, and there's standards out there. So the key to it is looking at those standards, making sure that you're looking at your architecture in that way, and then implementing it depending upon what your mission requirements are. With security, the amount of security you have always has to be balanced with business objectives and how secure you want to make it.
And that's the balance, I guess, that agencies are trying to strike, is how do we provide the most secure environment we can without stepping on the productivity of our people? Finding that fine line is pretty tough, I guess.
So the very tenets of virtualization allows you to create an isolated virtual machine workload, which means it's hard to attack and get in. So by virtualizing all the way down to your end user device or in an environment where you bring your own device, it allows you to encapsulate that and manage that back in the data center, even though you may be physically using different things. To be quite frank, I don't know how you would do it in a secure way if you didn't use virtualization along with the cloud, your journey to cloud computing in an effective way.
So you're securing your network and rather than every single access point on the network, Do I have
that?
It,
that
have
you'd
it
have
right?
to you look at the security of your network,
yeah.
And then you'd also secure the way that you manage your devices, no matter if it's a server down to your end user device, leveraging your dashboard of your cloud computing and managing that. And harnessing your IT resources.
We're starting to run out of time, believe it or not. I've enjoyed talking to you. We have one more segment after this. But of all the things that we've talked about so far, what are the misconceptions? What are the things that people should be thinking about as the next step, maybe even two steps beyond where we are today? CIOs tell me all the time, I don't have the time to really think about long-term 2 to 5 year planning because I'm really focused on what it is I have to get done today. What do you see in that 2 to 5 year horizon that IT people should be thinking about in government?
So the hardest thing for government to be able to think 2 to 5 years out is because we were talking a little bit earlier that budgets are set years in advance. And we talked a little bit about the need for looking at procurement reform and how budgets are spent to really harness and be able to take advantage of new technology that needs to be addressed. And I think our government executives are looking at that and trying to address it. But when you start looking at separating from the hardware and the software and having that agility, you have this massive amount of resources now that has that ability to be able to effectively be able to be planned for the future. You're not tied down to, you know, a vendor that is a vendor lock-in, right? So I would say the most important thing as you're building out your architecture for cloud computing, whether it be from the virtual for the mobile device all the way up to the data center, is you have to look at how you're going to adopt open standards. Open standards will continue to allow you to mix and match. And if you have followed that philosophy, which is not a new philosophy, though sometimes the best philosophies and applications are the old-fashioned ones, but if you've done that initially, you're able to knit together some of the old solutions that you have there along with some of these new strategies and evolve along your journey. Because it's very rare an agency can just flip a switch and go to the cloud, right? They have to evolve over time depending upon their budget, their constraints of the mission, yada, yada. So it's very important to look at open standards. What open standards would I look at? I'd look at DMTF and NIST standards. And VMware is very, very active in both these. DMTF stands for Distributed Management Task Force, and that's really looking at setting standards for the cloud. And NIST is obviously the standards agency for the government. And those are the two that I would really look at for cloud computing.
My guest is Aileen Black of VMware. We'll wrap up our conversation on industry chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment. It's as in-depth with Francis Rose.
Recently, UnitedHealthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. UnitedHealthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the 7 leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are UnitedHealthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job, it's an honor. UnitedHealthcare.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
A combat brigade is going to be assigned to the Pentagon's Africa Command next year. This is a pilot program that will send small teams of soldiers to countries around the continent to do training and participate in military exercises. General Ray Odierno, the Army's chief of staff, says the plan is a part of a new effort to provide U.S. commanders around the globe with troops on a rotational basis to meet military needs in their regions. I'm J.J. Green.
911, what's your emergency?
Every day, EADS North America supports homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Whether it's responding to emergencies or disasters, providing military helicopters or systems that patrol and secure our borders and coastlines, EADS North America delivers on our promises every day. EADS North America, commitment defines us.
Many factors affect job satisfaction. Hours, teammates, and opportunity can all make or break an experience. That's why it was an impressive achievement when 100% of employees surveyed recently reported they were proud to work for Acuity Inc. With a 766% growth rate and recognition as a best place to work, Acuity is attracting talented, passionate professionals and keeping them happy. Learn more. Visit myacuity.com/careers.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Aileen Black of VMware on Industry Chatter today. Now, you've been doing this for a little while. You've been with VMware, you said, for 8 years. What has changed in the time that you've been in the federal marketplace? What's changed about working with the government? What's changed about the people that you deal with? Anything that you've seen? What is the government doing better or worse now than it did when you first got into the market? Any of that?
I'd really kind of divide it in two different areas. One, I would divide it in expectations. And really the average user, whether it be the IT user that is within the agency or the average citizen out there, has a higher expectation from an IT perspective of the level of service and availability. The other part is the average IT executive has always been very dedicated and hardworking. So I'm not saying in 26 years ago they weren't. But today I see the IT executive really willing to innovate to really meet mission objectives. And you hear a lot of people, you know, actually badmouth the federal government these days. When you start looking at what they're able to achieve on the limited budgets, especially when they're leveraging technology like they are in some of the other projects that I cited earlier today, it makes me really proud. So I think those are the two biggest things, is the ability to be able to the expectations and our government agencies rising to the occasion and really innovating.
There's an interesting intersection there, too, I think, that wasn't necessarily common in government even 5 years ago, let alone before that. And that is the way the focus, in my view, has shifted in IT shops from we're the IT people to we're supporting the mission of whatever the agency is. Have you seen that, too?
I've definitely. Cloud computing is historically, if you would have went back when I was 4 years old, starting working with the federal government 26 years ago, missions would have to work around IT to figure out how to leverage them to work it around and actually change the mission. Today, IT is a leverage to help meet the mission. So, you know, that's a totally turning upside down. So when we go to talk to government agencies, 50% of the, you know, 10 years ago, 100% of the time, 90% of the time, you were talking to the person who was in charge of IT. At least half the time, we are talking to the business owner, the mission objective, because if they can understand how to leverage it and how to harness that agility and help to meet the mission, it's phenomenal in what they can do. Whether it be consolidating an entire data center into a backpack that helps our forward deployed forces be more effective and efficient. I think, I won't say the name of the agency, but we have one DOD agency that was able to consolidate all the transactions and build an application that was cloud ready to really be able to process 60,000 transactions in a very short period. That's more than Visa, which would allow them to do on the floor of these unfriendly territories to be able to know where they are and what they're doing. They had real stream data that really was coming from all over the cloud. So it really has changed. IT now is helping meet the mission.
From a nuts and bolts perspective, too, that's really good for the acquisitions, I imagine, because if you have your business owner involved in requirements writing and in the product development part of it, and rather than just showing up at the end for the final delivery, I would imagine you wind up with a much better process and a much better product at the end.
You know, no matter whether you're in private or public industry, the biggest challenge you have is in helping develop and attract personnel that understand that changing dynamic environment. It's very, very difficult because they have a big full-time job as it is, and at the same time, you need to help them meet the new challenges that are in front of them. I was sitting in a panel listening to Stephen Van Roekel the other day talk about some of the president's initiatives in developing a collaborative exchange with industry to help that happen. And when you start looking at, you brought up two different areas, IT and procurement. Those both have to be addressed on IT to help these IT executives understand how they can innovate with what they have. And I'll use that horrible term, they can do more with less. And then also from the procurement executives out there, you know, we obviously are understaffed in that area. There's a ton of procurement activity, and we need to find new ways of getting these folks that are responsible for procuring anything from, household products to IT to understand how to set and put together RFPs that can be efficiently and effectively responded to and then maintained and made sure that companies are delivering what the expectations are. That's that's a tall order.
We just have about a half a minute left. Is that arc on the up or the down slope or kind of flat, do you think, right now?
I think there's some investments in that area. I think we're on the upswing, but definitely that's an area if I was to say the government could make some investments, it would be in developing, and I think they recognize that, in developing their people and their ability to be able to meet the new mission.
I've really enjoyed having you here this hour, Aileen. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
Aileen Black of VMware, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation will be posted online for you to listen to anytime you want at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.